Hello, everybody. This is Flurries of Films. This week, we're talking about Independence Day.
Hit the music!
Everybody, I'm Michael Flaherty,
and I'm Colleen Flaherty,
and
this is Flaherty's on Films, a podcast where we discuss movies.
One day,
Michael,
we'll get it right.
What are we talking about this week, and what is it about?
We're talking about the movie Independence Day, directed by Roland Emmerich, starring Will Smith and
Harry Connick Jr.
Here's the description. The aliens are coming. This is a corny. I like this. The aliens are coming, and their goal is to invade and destroy Earth. Fighting superior technology, mankind's best weapon is the will to survive.
I don't know how you feel about this movie, but I'm going to give an A plus to that description.
I don't like that description. I feel like the aliens also had will. I mean, they're going out of their way to invade other planets for resources.
It doesn't say that mankind has more will to live. It says that's their best weapon.
It's implied. If you say that's their best weapon, that implies they don't have that weapon.
Whatever, man. Spoiler alert, we do win, so I guess we don't. We do have the superior will to live.
Is anybody going to listen to the rest of this podcast now that they know the ending? Colleen, what have you seen this film? Do you like this film?
I've seen this film a lot.
Yeah.
I probably saw it inappropriately young in the 90s when it came out. I've just seen it on and off. Here's what I'm going to say, though. Are you ready for this?
So ready.
I was like, oh, this will be fun. So when you folks are listening to this, it's later in July, but we got to watch it over on July 4th because we're like, what a funny film to watch on Independence Day. And I really liked it. I was like, this is a movie I very much enjoy watching, and not in a like, oh, the funny ironic way of watching like a Bad Boys 2. Like, I enjoyed
it. Is Bad Boys 2 bad? Is not good?
It's not, well, it's too long, but you know, it's just, it's like Michael Bay nonsense before it was unwatchable nonsense.
Sure.
I really enjoyed it, and I would love to explore with you why, because I don't think it's like a good film. But anyway, have you seen it? What do you think?
There's a lot of movies from my childhood where, like, I'm very ADD like you, but like, there's so many movies that I remember like being on, you know, around me, and I sort of like half saw it, you know. And I feel like with movies that you and John really liked, I feel like I was in and out of the movie 100 times. So I feel like I like half saw it like a million times. But I
now
probably
you've seen it for real.
I probably have seen it for real before, but I definitely saw it this last weekend, and I do not enjoy the film.
I'm so excited to get into this.
You know, but it's not really for like a specific reason. Like, oh, they really screwed this part up. My least favorite part about the movie is that I just get no emotions from it. You know, I don't think it's probably fair to say this is not contentious, that it doesn't take itself too seriously, right? Like, it's a fun, silly, campy, kind of corny movie, right?
Sure.
So, like, for me, it ends up not being, because it's not serious, which it's not really trying to be, it's not really scary. You know, it's not really like, oh, I'm really afraid about the aliens. And
so
I
Michael-
don't.
Oh, sorry, go on.
And I also don't think it's very funny. I don't like any of the jokes. So it's kind of nothing for me when I watch it.
So I do think it's campy, and it like it recognizes, but I don't think it leans into it too much. I don't know if you remember the 90s too much, Michael.
Yeah.
But there really weren't a ton of super sincere films. And I think this, like, the emotional core of this film, I think is actually pretty sincere, even though the plot isn't. If that makes sense.
I honestly really don't know what you mean by that.
Well, we'll talk more about it because I have a lot to say.
Do you think this is a funny movie?
Not intentionally. I mean, okay, there are things that make me laugh in this movie. Is that? There aren't like good jokes I would tell it.
I guess before we go to our next segment, I clarify my point is there's just nothing to latch on to for me as a, as like what is really good and why I would care, why I'd invest.
That's totally fair.
But for you, what is that thing?
Well, this is what I want to explore with you
later on. Okay. Okay. Here's what's going to happen not later is our first segment. Bam.
Time for Sam. This is the part of the show where Sam comes on and tells us some explosive facts about the film Independence Day.
It's haunting, Sam? And we're all cowering in fear. These facts. Go ahead.
Stargate. Are you quivering?
Yeah.
No, that's a film.
It's a show too, right?
Yes, but we're talking about the film in this case. So Roland Emmerich and Dean Devlin were going around Europe promoting their film Stargate when they were kind of asked about their feelings with aliens. And Emmerich doesn't really believe in aliens, but he has this huge like fascination with the idea of them. And he was kind of talking about this fascination, and he's like, what would happen if you would wake up one morning and discovered 15 mile wide spaceships hovering over the world? And then Emmerich turned to Devlin and said, I think I have the idea for our next film.
I like that concept. I thought it was very original and terrifying in an interesting way.
Their whole idea too was, if you have these aliens aliens have always traveled very far to get to the world, right? They're never like on Mars. They're always somewhere else and they have to travel a long distance. And they're saying, like, if aliens are coming this far, they're not going to just like hang out and hide and like meet one person in a cornfield.
Right.
It's going to be a big entrance. So that's kind of the film that they want to portray. However, as they're writing it, Tim Burton's working on a film too. It's called Mars Attacks. And they were very worried that people would think that the movies were related and compare them. So they wrote the script for this movie in just 3 weeks. They sold it the day after they finished it. They got principal filming done in 72 days. And they did all this to quickly push the film out so it would actually come out before Mars Attacks.
So, look, I'm not saying this is a great work of art or anything, but there's a lot of stuff in this movie that seems to me like it would take a long time. I mean, you kids, you're babies, so maybe you don't know this, but Independence Day is like kind of it was the first time we'd seen a movie like this. Like, now you see Superman and shit and you see New York blow up all the time, but this was really groundbreaking in its special effect. Yes.
Are you stealing my facts again?
I'm not. I remember.
Are you stealing my facts?
We're trying to make the unfamiliar familiar. That's how we sort of get rid of the fear.
I mean, John's super old, so he probably remembers, but like, oh, he didn't hear that. Okay. Let me try that again. John's super old, so he probably remembers that this movie was like such a fucking big deal. And even though it's like cheesy or whatever, no one had seen anything like this before. So I'm surprised that it's a rush job, especially with the pretty cool special effects. Michael, you should just cut that down when we do that.
No, sure.
So according to Devlin, the military originally, when they talked about making this film, were really supportive, and they let them talk to people and we're going to let them film on bases. And then they found out about Area 51. And they said, if you want any of our help, you have to get rid of any Area 51 reference. They refused to remove them. And so the military no longer supported this film.
I love that the makers of Independence Day had some real artistic integrity here. Fuck you, bros. Not today.
In a fun callback to our favorite game, Jeff Spot the Goldblum, Jeff Goldblum is in this film, and most of his dialogue was improvised.
Really?
Yes. Mostly in the scenes with Will Smith and Judd Hirsch. They would just go off. And
which one is Judd Hirsch?
His dad.
Oh, the dad. Okay.
So, kind of talking about what Colleen was saying of the incredible explosives and destruction scenes. So, there is a time when the White House explodes. To do that, they had to create a model of the White House. It was 10 feet by 5 feet and was used with the force perspective to make it seem like it was the real White House. It required a week to get it all ready, and they actually invited some of the press in to come and watch, and then they blew it up, and it was like this really cool explosion. So,
I have a cool fact about that. In Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me, Dr. Evil goes back in time to threaten the White House and then shows that footage from Independence Day, and they're like, no. And they're like, oh, that wasn't real. But now you need to give me $1 billion. Then they laugh because $1 billion doesn't exist in the 60s. I haven't seen that movie since high school. I don't know why I remember that and cannot tell you when any of my family's birthdays are. Go on, Sam.
So the production team at one point were testing out their light rigged helicopters that would be humankind's welcome wagon for the aliens. And after they had tested it, apparently more than 150 Californians called the police to report UFO sightings.
Oh, that's funny.
Excellent.
So there is the very famous speech in Independence Day given by Bill Pullman. I haven't actually seen Independence Day, but I've heard about the speech, and it's apparently very moving. So there's also a very famous speech in Shakespeare's Henry V. It's his St. Crispin Day's speech. And it is apparently a very moving speech. It's one of the most commonly referenced Shakespeare speeches in all of Shakespeare. And they were like, this is it. This is the kind of speech we need, this Henry V speech. And so Devlin was like, oh, great. We only have to write a speech as great as that. How are we going to do it? So they just kind of sat down and kind of closely, like, just kind of like wrote something in, but like replaced Crispin Day with Independence Day and stuff like that. But it's a little closer than you want. He said he wasn't worried about it because it's like Shakespeare's not going to sue him.
No one knows that shit.
So they wrote it out and then they put it in the script, and it was just meant to be a placeholder. But they would end up not changing anything except for a last addition. And I'm going to talk about that now. Originally, the Fox executives wanted to call this film Doomsday because the title Independence Day was already owned by Warner Brothers. So the two writers were really, really working on it. Pullman was working on it. Everyone was trying to convince them, you got to call it Independence Day. Like, Doomsday just doesn't have the right feel. So they decided to quickly throw in the line, today we celebrate our Independence Day, into the film to kind of almost pressure them. Like, see, look how good this line is. Imagine if the movie had the same title. Damn. And it actually ended up working and they got the rights so that they could call it Independence Day. They also kind of used the same technique of pushing it to get it released in July versus later on.
August, when Mars Attacks
and Bill Pullman should have also said, and the filmmakers deserve more money. And then the Fox executives are like, well, I guess he said it.
I mean, it's not that similar to the St. Crispin speech. That's pretty Shakespeare-y and real long.
And the idea is there.
Sure. Okay, sorry. Go on.
So this film holds the record for the most miniature model works to appear in a film. This was kind of considered the last big disaster film before CGI took over. So even though there's little CGI in this film, it's not as, like, a lot more models were used.
That's why I'm surprised with Colleen's statement that this was the first time we'd seen anything like this. Disaster movies.
Yeah, not the practical effects part, just the way this disaster movie unfolded.
And how
the blowing up cities.
But
like how that's a staple now of any disaster or big blockbuster film like that. and that wasn't a thing.
That's new, that was, Sam? Destruction of buildings?
Yes. I'm going to get more into that, but yes.
Oh.
So a big thing also with this film is that Fox did a massive marketing campaign to help promote it. So one of the big things they did is they did a first dramatic commercial during the Super Bowl 30. And it actually has inspired for a lot more campaigns to show their blockbuster off at the Super Bowl. But this was the first one. And I just want to read some of the taglines for this film that were in like all the commercials. I think you guys might appreciate them.
Very excited.
We've always believed we weren't alone. On July 4th, we'll wish we were.
Ooh. Wow.
Earth, take a good look. It could be your last.
Nice.
Don't make plans for August.
No,
that was just threatening.
I didn't.
The whole tagline is don't make plans for August. Dot dot dot. Because of the aliens. Dot dot dot. Never mind.
In July, it's the whole thing.
It's the whole thing. Why watch the film?
So basically, this film has a lot of. I want to say it's kind of the precipice of film timing. Like, this was kind of the moment that would become, like, the Avengers and become the Avengers. I'm blanking on other ones, but you know what I mean. Like
these, the Avengers.
Like the Avengers, exactly. Okay.
Sorry, are you saying this is the beginning of blockbusters?
No. I'm saying it's kind of the beginning of just, like, this mass push for, like, the big advertisements that... Like, you know, when Star Wars was coming out with their new ones, like, you couldn't turn left without seeing some ad for it.
Advertising for movies. This is the start of that?
Just, like, huge marketing pushes? Is that what you
mean? Yeah, like, huge marketing pushes. And then the huge destruction. Like, it was just kind of the first in the new wave
of how
movies are coming out.
I remember when Phantom Menace was coming out, Queen Amidala was on all the Dr. Pepper cans.
See, there you go. That's actually cool. Independence Day had a lot of those too.
A lot of Dr. Pepper.
I think it actually was Pepsi, but yeah.
Oh, fuck. Never mind. I don't care.
So the movie would premiere on July 3rd, and it would surpass, or it would have the shortest amount of time for a film to gross $100 million, and they did it in 6 days. It beat out Jurassic Park, which did it in 9. Whoa. It would gross over $817.4 million worldwide. And it is still on the 100 top worldwide grossing films of all time. Your question of the week is, where does it fall in the top 100?
Okay, I have my guess.
I'll guess first. 25.
You said top 10.
No, you
said top 100.
She said top 100, Michael.
Oh, okay. I'll say then 25 then.
60.
72.
Oh, yeah. Damn it.
And also, it was the highest grossing film of 1996, beating out Twister, Mission Impossible, and Hunchback of Notre Dame.
The Disney movie?
The Disney movie. It should also be noted that Mars Attack did come out that year, and it was considered a box office failure, and a lot of people say that is because people were done with aliens. They had already seen Independence Day.
I bet it's a shit movie too.
What's that?
I bet it's a shit movie. I just feel like I'm anti Tim Burton.
Yeah, that feels like a dumb excuse. Like, oh, they've already seen one alien movie a whole month ago, so they're just done with it. You know how people, when they like a thing, they only like that one thing and will never
people
like
are
anything
like,
related?
Avengers, nah, I've already seen 3 other films like that.
Right. Like, when you see one superhero movie, fuck all superhero movies.
Oh, wait,
right?
This is the second Star Wars? Nah, I've seen that before.
Nah.
Anyway, that was a fantastic segment. That was bam.
Time for Sam.
Now we're...
I wasn't done. Did you want me to keep going?
Oh, no.
I'd say that was and is.
Continues to be in perpetuity.
I was just letting you guys go. You seem to be on a fun tangent.
Viewers, listeners, do you like this segment so far? Let us know.
I mean, your question's usually at the end. I don't. I'm defending you, Michael. Anyway, go on, Sam.
This film was nominated for two AFI list. It didn't make either, but it was nominated for the 100 Years, 100 Thrills, and for the top 10 science fiction films. It was nominated for 2 Academy Awards. It would win one. It'd be nominated for, but not win, Best Sound, and would win Best Visual Effects.
Sure.
Independence Day is considered the turning point of disaster elements. We already kind of talked about this, but so I won't go into it anymore. Also, this movie found increased interest in dolphin-themed jewelry, according to jewelry designers and marketing consultants.
Why?
Because Jasmine's engagement ring was dolphin-themed.
I watched this behind a tent screen, so I didn't see all the details.
Oh, you got the tent this time?
Got the tent this time. Wasn't bit up.
Nice.
For those folks at home, we watch it outdoors. And Michael got the mosquito netting tent.
Hell yeah.
And yes, it was great. Michael, Will Smith says the line, you know, Jasmine has things for dolphins. And then Harry Connick Jr. says, bro, this is a wedding ring. Engagement ring. Shit.
My final fact for you guys today is that this film was so successful, there was immediate plans to make a trilogy. However, Will Smith demanded too much money to be in both. And after a long time, because Emmerich started getting different projects, they finally, after 20 years, got the rights to start making the second one. Will Smith didn't want to be in it because he said he doesn't like to look in the past. He wants to keep moving forward in his career. And so Independence Day Resurgence would come into the theaters in 2016, and it would not even make back its production budget. No talks in the works about a third one.
I literally just watched it. It is so shit. Anyway, that was...
Bam.
Time for Sam.
And this time it's over.
For real, though. What are we talking about?
I think what we're going to talk about is our next segment, which we call Critics Corner.
Sweet.
And this is where we get to see not just our opinion, not just Sam's opinion. She doesn't really give opinions, but this is the critics' opinions.
All right. I'm going to go first. But all before right. we start, I'm going to tell you. So the Rotten Tomatoes score is like 65%. This is very well regarded with audiences. And there were not that many one-star reviews, which I was very surprised by.
Yeah. You'd think some people. All right. Weird.
You know. For obvious reasons. Anyway, this is from Dwayne Brigg of The Hollywood Reporter. A sci-fi story constellation of the brightest star elements. With German director Emmerich at the helm, Independence Day soars as a filmic Uberkraft.
Why does German? Why did they need to bring that up?
You know, German.
He's a German. Here's another review. This is by Tom. We got Tom reviewing the house. He writes for Amazon Reviews. I found it too unrealistic for adults to watch. Compared to the quality of recent sci-fi movies, such as The Martian, instantly decoding the code without having any prior knowledge, developing the computer virus all of a sudden, that was fast. Little Michael editorial. He did that really quickly. Commander-in-chief flying a fighter jet on his own, etc., etc. It was like a Pokemon movie, good for kids under the fourth grade. I agree with some
of that. Michael, do you remember going to see the Pokemon movie together?
Hell yeah, Ash died.
Was that the one with Mewtwo?
Hell yeah. It's called like Mewtwo Strikes Back or something.
Probably that's exactly what it's called.
It might be called Pokemon the first movie. Hold on, let me look this up. Pokemon.
This is from Roger Ebert of the Chicago Tribune. My theory is that any aliens who could be taken in by this particular plan probably arrived here after pedaling across space on bicycles.
Hold on.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was called the first movie, but there is another movie called Mewtwo Strikes Back. So that's two. Really
Strikes Back.
Yeah, so hey, there's a lot of Pokemon movies.
Okay. Weirdly, but the one we saw in theaters was the first Pokemon movie.
Pokemon the first movie, and they're like, we know there's going to be a bunch of these. All right. This one's from Amazon customer, and this is an Amazon review. I can't believe how many people give this movie more than one star. It's horrible, cheesy, and not worth a cent. Howard the Duck deserves more stars than this stunt movie. I don't know anything about Howard the Duck. I know he's like a thing.
Yeah, it's like an 80s movie and there's a duck.
And George Lucas.
He's like the main character. And I think it's based off a comic book. Some people argue it's one of the first big blockbuster comic book movies.
Yeah, funny. It's fun.
That's all the facts I know. This is from Rita Kempley of the Washington Post. Maybe the movie maker's mission was to boldly go where everyone in Hollywood has gone before. The bank.
Oh, Rita. That's a Rita slam. This is by Sal Quet, and this is an Amazon review. To enjoy any science fiction movie, you have to buy into the fictional science of the movie. It has to seem realistic. Here's a typical problem in Independence Day. You ever rent a car and find you can't just pull out of the airport parking lot because you can't figure out how the unfamiliar car starts up, gets into gear, where the headlights are, the wipers, the seat controls? And yet, in this movie, you can apparently hop right into an alien flying vehicle and just take it for a spin. But say not only to take it for a spin, but save the planet. The only time I saw this horrendous movie, I saw the "Usher picked the wrong day to give up drinking" line coming from a mile off. And the fact that the script writers would try to pull this off years after Airplane, well, it really makes it clear that Hollywood doesn't think very highly of the typical American movie goer.
Wow. You know, I feel like I've rented a few cars in my day, and I do not have as much trouble as this guy seems to have with rental cars. Like, it's not that hard to figure out how to drive a car.
How do you do it? There's a wheel at the front. This is
How do you turn on the windshield wipers?
This is like my Jerry Seinfeld, but for it's like too unfamiliar with cars. And he hates coffee, and he doesn't like Netflix. Clay, we're going to go to our next favorite segment, and this is called Favorite Part, Least Favorite Part. We're going to tell the audience favorite part and least favorite parts.
Michael, what's your least favorite part of this film?
Let's see. One
I'll go first. Oh, sorry.
Okay. Yeah, you go first.
Okay, my very least favorite part is the Randy Quaid subplot. I think it's really dumb and it adds nothing to the movie. And I feel like at some point they kind of realized that because they cut out a bunch of it. I actually have seen a director's cut where that story is much longer.
Yeah.
And his character is dumb, his redemption is dumb, but like his pivotal end scene like was so written into the script, I feel like they just couldn't get rid of it. But I don't like Randy Quaid. I don't care about his kids. It adds too much length to the movie. So that's it. And also maybe it's racist, but I don't know.
Is it? Why is it racist?
It's not really. I mean, racist isn't the right word. It's just a bit, I feel like it reminds me of Michael Bay movies when they try to go to other places in the world.
Oh, like, sure.
You know, like there's a scene where the spaceship's coming over Baghdad, and instead of going over a city in Iraq, it's just like people in the desert with burqas on.
You know,
it's like,
Iraq.
It's not great, right?
Sure.
It's not, I don't know if it's out and out racist. It's just like a very 90s way of thinking about the world, which is not, which is, you know, maybe a bit racist. I don't know if that's really Lee's favorite part. I just, that was one thing I kind of bumped on in this viewing that I didn't love. What do you not like about it?
Here's something that might surprise you as a not liker of the film. I actually do like the main characters. I like Bill Pullman and I like Will Smith and I like Jeff Goldblum. And so, like, you know, them kind of hanging out, their kind of goofy dialogue, you know, it's fun. Not great. But something I don't like is I just feel the movie is too packed with characters. I feel like I don't like any movie that has too many main characters. I like real simple movies. I like just
like
have
Avengers. Fuck off.
Honestly, yeah, I kind of do feel that way.
Okay.
So like Will Smith's character, like I would have liked his movie, and I feel like I would have liked Jeff Goldblum's movie, and I feel like I would have liked Bill Pullman's movie, but their arcs have to get so simplified. Like, oh, the president has a problem, and now he's in a fighter jet. Like, it feels all too fast for me, where I feel like it's not, and my problem isn't that it's unrealistic. I couldn't follow. It's just like, it's too condensed. It feels like the story is being told at me just because, like, I don't feel it enough. because of how cramped it is. And that's partially due to Randy Quaid and everything else that they have to throw in the movie. And like Jasmine and the first lady, like, oh, where to get, like, just stop. That's too many things.
Can I piggyback off of this?
Sure.
Because what you're talking about is my favorite thing about this movie.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Because I've thought about it a lot. Because as I said, I thought I kind of ironically liked the silly big budget 90s action movie that I genuinely enjoyed. And I think it's just like, you don't see movies like this anymore, because it's like even dumb movies have to be smart now. Or are they like, they always try it. Like if you watch a Transformers film, it always has an unnecessarily convoluted plot or trying to make a point. And that's why they suck and fail, because they're bad at it. But like this movie is just so simple. It is like pure escapism. In a nice plot about aliens coming in and interesting, or it was interesting at the time. And yeah, I like Jeff Goldblum and Will Smith are just playing themselves. And you're like, I like that. Bill Pullman is just a sexy young president who has a commanding presence. I get it. I don't need time for that. I get exactly who they are. I like it when they're together. I don't need more. I like the simplicity of it. And the escapism of it. I already mentioned why I like the effects and stuff. So those are the things I like. Also, I forgot how hot everyone was in this movie. I mean, Goldblum and Smith, man.
It's Bill Pullman. No Earth Girls Are Easy, though. That's peak Goldblum.
Right. I suppose this is peak Goldblum in like his most Goldblumness rather than his peak hotness. I just really enjoyed it. I don't overthink it. Don't. Stop picking at the plot. Just enjoy. Just kick back.
That's hard, but like, there's nothing for me to enjoy is my issue.
Okay. Like, see, I enjoyed all of this.
There is good spectacle. I mean, the alien ships are all like, they actually all really, really looks good. And I
think the plot is really, except for the Randy Quaid shit, I think it's actually pretty well paced. Like, kind of the slow reveal of the aliens and then the, what are they going to do? They're just sitting there. How would you react? I don't know.
I agree with you, actually. I think the pacing is good. But I'm thinking, like, as far as spectacle goes, I think a movie that came out 5 or 10 years after this movie would probably look worse just because of all the CGI they would do. That would have aged worse.
The practical effects are great.
So, no, I mean, it is a real accomplishment that it looks as good as it does.
Well, so then, and to the simplicity point, like, it's stupid that the entire world is just waiting on America to solve all the problems with the young hot president. But like the emotional culmination of the movie is like, man, we're awesome. Let's fucking do it. And I know people make jokes about that speech, but I actually think it's a really well-written speech. I really like it. It actually gets to me. I think it's great.
I think it is a good speech, but I don't know.
Fighting for our right to live. To exist, and should we win the day? Okay, I won't do it, but it's great.
Sure.
So those are the things I like.
All right, now we're gonna go to our next segment, which is the intern's summary. I'll start reading this plot here. It's July 2nd, and we open the film with the shot of the moon, and something looms, casting a shadow over the plaque commemorating the moon landing in 1969. America rules. What?
I just write notes.
Okay.
Our intern was busy this week, so I wrote the...
It's a really big spaceship. You know what just occurred to me? I only know a couple other Roland Emmerich movies. The lightest one I saw was White House Down, starring Channing Tatum. You seen that one? But the other one...
I saw the other one that was like White House Down.
That was, with Gerard Butler.
About. White House Down, but not.
But the other, I think the more popular Roland Emmerich movie is The Day
Olympus After... Has Fallen was the one I saw.
The more popular one is The Day After Tomorrow, starring Jake Gyllenhaal and Dennis Quaid.
Have you seen it?
I have. Here's why I bring it up. This movie happens on July 2nd. So their danger comes in 2 days. So that's just funny.
The day after tomorrow.
Yeah, it's just funny. That's like a reoccurring bit of his.
I really liked the opening bit. I thought it was very kind of cool and majestic and menacing. I remember.
Oh, we're not talking about The Day After Tomorrow anymore.
We're not. I've never seen that. But
you've never seen it? He's Jake Gyllenhaal's in a library. Dennis Quaid is walking on snow. It's good.
Okay, I'll watch it.
No, I don't recommend it.
You know, like I said, I watched this movie a bunch. John and I grew up in this movie, and when we were in the backyard and it turns on, I'm like, chills. Should I mention the nice thing John did for me?
No, please.
Where when I saw this way too young, and then I was so nervous about aliens coming, and John's like, no, don't worry about it, because you see, they go over a big population center. So the closest they would get to is Chicago. And by the time they destroyed Chicago, we'd already have a contingency plan in place. And at the time I was like, that is so nice that John said that really nice thing to me to, but I'm sure that was just him working it out loud. Like, I'm sure he did not.
Cause he was also afraid. He was like, are they coming?
No, he's just like, look at this logically, dummy. I was like, thanks, John. Thanks, big bro.
Thanks, big bro.
Anyway, so there's a slow reveal as scientists and militaries all over the world learn that something is coming. Like, what is it? Is it a meteor? No, because it's slowing down. So they call the president, Bill Pullman, and he's in bed with his daughter, Egg.
Is that her name?
No. So I was watching Independence Day Resurgence. I was like, oh, that girl who was the president's daughter, is that the girl who played in the original film? And no, because the original kid actor is Mae Whitman, or Egg, from Arrested Development.
That's funny. She had a career.
I know. This is Anna's The Nose on Plain Space.
I know I've told you this, but did you know their original idea for that character was to have her played by another actress every episode?
That wasn't very funny.
But they didn't stick with that. Are you done?
President Whitmore. So anyway, he's young. He's hot. He's not doing that great in the polls. That's important, I guess.
All right.
Now you.
Then we meet genius cable company employee David Levinson, peak Jeff Goldblum, and his almost offensively Jewish father. Is it offensive that we said it was offensive?
Probably.
He's just Jewish.
I don't know. Just there's some lines where he's like, if I was writing dialogue for a Jewish person, that's how I'd write it, because I don't like, oh, look at me, I'm a schlemiel. I don't know. It just seemed like they were leaning into it too
much. I'm not smart enough to know schlemiel.
Like a slob. But the fact that Sam said all their lines were, whatever you call it.
Improvised.
Wow. Yes. Could not think of the word improvise. That says a lot. Now it's probably offensive that I wrote it that way. Anyway, go on.
All right. David never, here's the thing about David. He never got his divorce, and he's really good at chess. Don't worry, this comes up. It's not for no reason. He never
got over his divorce. He did get divorced. He just never took out his wife.
Sorry, I said it wrong. He should have gotten over his divorce, though. It's been 3 years. I mean, dude, get over it. What are you doing?
Am I right?
Checkmate on your life.
I don't think I'm using that right.
No, I don't think so. We got to checkmate ourselves to the next paragraph.
Also, Harvey Fierstein is in this film.
Kid, do your best Harvey Fierstein impression.
I can't.
I got to call my lawyer.
Oh my God, that was so good. I got to call my mother. I call my therapist.
No, we're just hurting ourselves. These aren't good impressions at all. These are terrible.
Screw my lawyer.
There you go. You're getting there. Well, hold on. We'll work it out. I got to call my lawyer. I can't.
David!
See, this is fun. Now we're having fun.
I think we did it perfectly. The fun thing is that when we went on a family trip to New York, John and I got to see Harvey Fierstein, a starring role as Tevye in The Fiddler on the Roof, and Mikey had to go see the fucking 5 hours of The Glass Menagerie that fucking Tennessee Williams play. And John and I never let Michael forget it, because we're good people. Anyways, it's my turn. So then we're in California. We meet Randy Quaid. Yay. He's a drunk crop duster who says he was abducted by aliens. But who cares? I don't care. Anyway, suddenly the skies are on fire. And out of the fire comes 15-mile-wide spaceships appearing over the skies of major cities across the globe. Shit.
That's a lot of miles.
Here's another thing I need to say about this fucking movie. Is that it's always bothered me that they would go to Washington, D.C., because it feels like they're just going over major metropolitan areas. But then there is actually a point in the movie that they've been studying Earth for many years, and they do know a lot about Earth. So I take that back, and I'm sorry, movie. So it makes sense that you chose where you chose.
If you were studying Earth, maybe you would have learned about the common cold. next we go back to California to meet, oh wait, Yeah, we're still here. We're going back to California?
Because we were cities across the globe. Now we're back in California.
Got it. By so we meet Jasmine, who's played by Vivica A. Fox. She's a person, right? Does she do
other... She's a person.
What else
in
do you
the
do?
In Independence Day Resurgence, she becomes a doctor.
All right.
Did you know that Michael J. Fox's middle name is A, but he didn't want to be Michael A. Fox?
But Vivica was like, hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
No, Vivica some Fox? No way.
Vivica's like, I know what I am.
What's her other movies that she's been in?
I don't know. Independence Day Resurgence.
That's it. I was thinking. Her cute kid and Captain Steve Hiller, played by Will Smith. He has got to go back to base because of the aliens. The scene where he finds out the aliens are real is very good. I like the scene a
See?
Lot.
See? Didn't you laugh at that? He's like, get his paper. And then he looks laugh.
I don't know if laugh is the right word, but it's like, well done, I thought.
Oh, she was in Kill Bill. She was one of the main
people
she fought.
Was she the first person she thought, like initially right
so,
away
yes.
in the first movie?
And she was very good in that. And she was in Batman and Robin. Anyway,
she kind of sounds like a Batman villain.
Vivica Fox.
Back in New York, David has figured out something important that he has to tell the White House, where his ex-wife happens to work.
Oh, boy. That his ex-wife was also a mom in Gossip Girl. So.
Nice, nice. I was wondering.
Blair's mom.
Blair's mom. That's right. That's right.
Blair is the best character.
Totally.
You get it.
I get it, man. Blair is way better than Dorothy.
You think another character?
It stars Blair. Those are the two main characters, Blair and Dorothy.
You think?
And they're like always doing pranks on Susan. And Susan's like, come on, guys.
You think these elites of New York teenagers? Anyway, what are we doing? Cut back to Steve. Oh, yeah. So we're with Steve and his buddy Jimmy, played by Harry Connick Jr.
It is funny how they're not gay.
Isn't that hilarious?
That's pretty good. That's because there's like, are they gay?
But there's a funny bit where Harry Connick Jr. leans down. He's like, look at your butt. And then he sees the ring. And then, you know what's funny, though? I thought it was actually kind of a progressive joke for the 90s of a don't ask, don't tell military era where someone walks in on him proposing. And he's like, hey, man, cool. Let me leave you alone. Not like,
but I mean, it's a laugh, but it's like a laugh line. It's like, here we go, audience. This one's for you. That's dumb.
That's true. It is dumb because they would be a very cute couple, actually.
They had a hot sex.
Cool. So we find out Steve has been rejected from NASA. Oh, this is dream. See, Michael, look at all this character. God. And also, he wants to marry Jasmine, despite her being an amoral stripper who will ruin his career by association.
Where are we at?
Back to DC.
Back to DC. David gets to the White House with his dad. Thank God he's there. He gets in to see the president and explains with a handy diagram.
Did you think it was cute when he's driving down to DC? Like, how are we going to find her? It's like, oh, I got a phone book on my computer and I'm going to triangulate her signal.
Sure. It's cute. And he explains that the ships are using our satellites against us. And there's a countdown clock to destroying us all. Checkmate. See, because that's why they were playing chess earlier. Because what would checkmate mean?
Okay, I love this movie. He might say checkmate too much.
Yeah.
Might come up too many times. Michael, I feel like you had some funny bits to say when he's like drawing out this diagram. See, you can't just connect to somebody on the other side of the earth if you don't have satellites. So they're using our satellites.
What was my bet? I don't remember.
You're like, they really haven't devised a system to just talk to each other. You don't remember your hilarious bits?
No, it sounds funny though.
And then you're like, and now they just use countdown clocks? Like, why don't they just do it?
No, that sounds like John's bit.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh. Huh. Well.
Yeah. That was it was John's bit that they'd have synchronized clocks.
Well, maybe John's hilarious.
Yeah, I think it's John. I mean, it sounds like just practical. It's not even
so. Anyway, the they start opening up, and then this like some power center over like the Empire State Building and that one big tower in LA that I don't know what it's called, and over the White House, and boom, explosions all over the world. Fuck.
Fuck, damn. Fuck, man. Shit.
The White House crew barely makes it out on Air Force One. Jasmine is saved because she jumps into a closet, which is fine, I guess.
And a dog escapes too.
Right. So sorry. They're in a tunnel in their cars, and she like gets into a closet so the fireball doesn't get her, even though it would suck all the oxygen out of the room. But who cares? That's not the point of this movie. That's pretty much it for the people we know so far.
Are we going to go past the part where the dog is like, oh, the dog. And then the dog like does a dramatic slow motion like, oh, I'm about to survive. And then there's like the dramatic music with the dog like almost getting there. He makes it. And like the audience applauds. Like that's the kind of movie it is.
I'm here for it.
And I'm not here for it. So I feel like that is like, if you like that, then you'll like the film. And if you don't like that, you will not like the film.
I don't think I do like that now, but I like that in this film. Because
what do you mean?
It's hard to execute perfectly.
What do you mean?
That kind of sentimentality is hard to do well.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you could make that movie today.
What?
But
yay,
the dog made
it. But you like
yes!
this movie. But you like this movie today, so you could make it today because you still like it.
I just feel like we've become too cynical. The filmmakers would try to like.
But
do
you
a
like
batch
it now,
irony.
So you're not too cynical.
You're right. You're right. It could be made today. I just don't believe in Hollywood today.
Who's the cynical one? Go ahead.
Anyway, so they decide to launch retaliation. They're gonna, you know, get their fighter jets up against this spaceship. But fuck, there's these shields, man. You can't get through them.
Damn it.
Steve Hiller and his friends. Everybody dies except for Steve.
Shit.
Harry Connick Jr.
Here's my least favorite part of the film. Harry Connick Jr. HCJ never sings.
Not once, like, put your mask back on for once in my life. Nothing. That would have been the perfect time for it, and he just didn't take the opportunity.
He did say, make two lovers of friends. No homo! To Will Smith. Which would have been great.
The ripe for opportunity there.
Is this me? When yep. Steve lands next to an alien ship, he punches it in the face, which is very cool.
Yeah, he says, welcome to Earth, and then he gets out a cigar. A lot of cigar smoking in this movie to suggest that it's a common thing that people just do.
If you're cool.
If you're cool. And he goes, that's what I call a close encounter. Tell me to laugh at that.
Because it's not funny.
That's a
it's
sweet
not,
joke.
No, it's not even a joke, though. It's like, I get it. It's like, I don't know. Top Secret has jokes in it. This movie doesn't have jokes. It has like.
Can you give an example of a Top Secret joke? The Top Secret, the film starring Val Kilmer?
Let's see here. No, because they're all really visual jokes. They're not really ones I can just say. But you know what I mean? Like, welcome to Earth. That's not a funny line. That's like a cool, he did it line.
I feel like we're saying the same thing.
That's not the same thing at all. Is that a joke to you? You're like, that's a good joke.
I mean,
it's not
as funny as when she says, I know a little German, and then she waves to a short man who's German.
That's a joke. That's like, haha.
You're right. It's not a classic setup punchline. You're correct.
You like laugh, but when he goes, welcome to Earth, I mean, I think the expected reaction is, yeah.
Yeah.
And he goes, that's what I call close encounter. You go, yeah. But when you hear it, you don't laugh.
I guess not. But I did go, yeah. And I was very happy. I was very excited to experience
that. I don't like misery. I just like being sad. Okay, so he punched it. Meanwhile, the president and his team discuss launching nuclear weapons. That's when we find out Area 51 is super real and has aliens.
That's a good part, I actually think. It's a good use of the dad. So Jeff Goldblum comes in and is like, are you fucking kidding me that you're going to just do a nuclear winter when you don't even know what's happening? And then the dad comes in like a doddering old fool like, hey, there's the whole Roswell thing. Area 51, you knew all about it. And they're like, all right, idiot, just calm down. And then they're like, oh, actually.
I actually had the exact opposite reaction.
Really?
Yeah, because when they're doing, they're like, Jeff Goldblum's like, hey, don't kill us all with nukes. I'm like, oh, this is actually an interesting conversation. If aliens did come and our weapons weren't working, would we deploy nukes? Hopefully we would not, because that would kill us all. But, you know, the alien is very threatening. But with Judd Hirsch's like, now I'm going to be on the screen for 5 minutes. I'm like, this is it. I'm just so taken out of the scene, because it's like, obviously they would not actually listen to him talk for that long. You know, because
I feel like you and I were expecting different things from the movie.
I'm not saying like, here's what I expect and here's what I want. Oh, they're going to give me what I want. But like when they started the scene and have that interesting discussion, they drew me in because of it was interesting. But then because Judd Hirsch is like, now I'm going to be the part of the scene. I'm like, whoa, this is so, I hate to say it's unrealistic, but that's what drew me out of it. It's like,
I guess I knew that this wasn't the kind of movie where you're going to get drawn in with an interesting ethics conversation about how you fight aliens. So I wasn't disappointed that that didn't come to fruition.
They gave me some interesting and then took away and replaced it with nothing. That's what I'm saying.
I think I would just agree to disagree, friend.
But you like Judd Hirsch.
Is that his name?
Yeah, why?
Was he in other stuff?
I don't know.
I feel like you keep saying it slightly differently every time, so I wonder.
Judd Hirsch. I've been saying it the same every time.
You said Judd, and then you said Jude. I didn't know. I don't know.
Jade House. I just listen to what I say and say that.
I'm sorry. I hear it now. Okay. You're right. Anyway. So, yeah. So they go to Area 51. The whole White House crew, David, and then Steve also goes there. We meet Dr. Oaken, who's Data, who I was very excited about seeing, because he was delightful. He is a great character actor who should just be in more stuff. What's his name, Michael?
Brett Spiner.
So he's the head scientist. He explains everything we need to know about the aliens. They're actually very vulnerable like we are. They wear these exoskeleton suits. We do have the spaceship from when they landed in Roswell in the 50s. It's fun. I don't know. I just thought he had a fun manic energy introduced to this group of people.
I agree. He's a good character because of his, he does it well, and it's a nice contrast with everyone else who's very serious.
Right. They're like, people are dying. He's like, I know, but I just don't get to get out much. So nice people.
Yeah, that was fun. That was good.
So then at one point Steve had dragged an alien through the desert, which that was a fun scene.
Which part?
When he's like, I'm dragging your ass through this desert. And what the hell is that smell? It's very Will Smith.
It is very Will Smith. Again, it doesn't really make me laugh. It is. There's some charm to it, definitely. But it's not
so
like
charming.
I think we have different understanding of what the word comedy means.
I didn't say it was comedic.
What did you say?
It made me laugh.
What's the difference?
I don't need a classic joke to make me laugh every time. I just, that was fun.
Okay.
Anyway. So Steve brought an alien there. They're dissecting it. Then it's awake and shit. And then it mind melds with the president. And the president's like, I see their plan. They're just going to fucking kill everybody. So
I feel like that was disadvantageous for the alien.
Yeah. I mean, probably shouldn't have mind melded.
Shouldn't mind meld with the president if you're going to give away your secrets.
Dummy.
Fucking idiot.
Also, there's this one point where Steve just gets a helicopter and he goes and saves Jasmine, who happens to be with the First Lady. And that's never explained as to how he knows where they are. But don't worry about it.
Don't
Everybody
worry, this,
shut
it's
up.
It's a dumb movie. We don't have to care about
it. Shut
that.
Up.
Yeah.
So now it's Michael's turn.
What to do? They try nukes. It doesn't work.
Yeah, so why did they need to have a conversation about it? They tried, it didn't work. Now move on.
And then, whatever. The First Lady dies. That's sad. President Whitmore. I feel like there's a character in Lost named Whitmore.
Oh, yeah?
President Whitmore lies to his daughter about it because he's busy. It's July 4th, and David has given up all hope.
Whitmore is the name.
Oh, yeah.
Charles and Petty.
Charles Whitmore, yep. His dad tells him he'll catch a cold if he stays on the floor. Wait a minute. Wait. Cold. Cold. Quick. Catch a cold, you say?
This is one of my favorite, like, the way you explore 90s ethics is like Jeff Goldblum wants to save the world by doing pansy shit like recycling. How about actually save the world by taking on aliens?
It is interesting, the sort of recycling and environmentalism resurgence in the 90s. All right, that's when we got Fern Gully, right? It's just weird, and like Captain Planet was that time. It's just weird that there was a peak of that in media.
That was very cool. Saving the Whales was real big. They had a whole Star Trek movie about it. It was great.
It's cool. It's fun that it just faded, just went away. Planet was saved.
Well, because now we're like, it's probably a little more complex than that.
Oh, I was thinking just because we're all going to die. It's too late.
Well, yeah, because like in Captain Planet's like, you should recycle and we should, you know, do cool things like separate our aluminum. And it's like, no, actually, it's these large corporations that are
we'd have to fundamentally change our system. And it's like, right. Captain Planet's like, I got to go somewhere else.
Yeah. Anyway, aha! Catch a cold! David's going to use his 1995 Macintosh laptop to give the mothership a virus, a cold, if you will, to take down the shields. Steve is going to fly both of them. So what a fun pairing, Will Smith and Jeff Goldblum. That's just a hottie duo. Fly them in his spaceship that they already have at Area 51.
Here's the thing, though. Think about this.
Uh-huh. Go on.
Jeff Goldblum.
Uh-huh.
Will Smith. Yep. Harry Connick Jr. Who is the hottest?
Don't make me choose.
I'm making you choose. Because I might say Harry Connick.
Well, that's not fair because like he's the best singer. So I feel like that notches up the hottiness.
So you're saying that's
actually
just me.
Jeff Goldblum can sing too.
Can he?
Yeah.
And when has he ever sung?
He's a singer.
In what context? When has he ever sung a note?
I've seen him sing in things.
In what things?
Glee. I didn't want you to make me admit it.
They do auto-tune and shit.
Don't make me admit it. That's the only... Obviously, Harry Connick Jr. is the best singer of the three.
And who's the hottest of the three?
It's rude. That's a rude question.
I'm being rude.
I think... I don't know. I don't know. Well, who you think Harry?
Harry Connick, yeah.
I think Bill Pullman's pretty hot, though.
Are you really not going to answer?
I'm really not going to answer. I can't. Wow. I just can't.
Jesus Christ. All right. We'll get a new co-host next time.
Next time. Make Sam answer. Who does she think is
Sam,
hottest?
Who's the hottest?
Sam.
Will Smith.
Will Smith. All right. See? Confident. Just bold. Just out there.
Okay. I think Jeff Goldblum.
Okay.
His nervous energy is very appealing to me.
That's cool. We're all on different sides. I love this.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure he said hottest, not appealing.
Not like go.
I don't take it back. Anyway, so the entire world coordinates to attack for the mere minutes the shield is gonna be down when he gives it a cold. And that's one of my favorite lines is when they have to do it by Morse code, and this British officer goes, it's like, it's from the Americans. They've done a counterattack. About bloody time. Like, everyone in the entire world is just cooling their heels, waiting for America to step in and fuck shit up.
I like how he said bloody, so we're like, oh, that's Britain.
Yeah, that was very
helpful. And they're like, once this tea cools, then I'll be ready to attack. Turn that python off. Okay, so here's the next bit. The president gives a stirring speech. The famous one. And of course,
we will not go quietly into that good night.
Does he say quietly in the good night?
Quietly into that. No, we will not go quietly into the night.
Yeah, I think you said it
wrong. We'll not vanquish without a fight. We're going to live on. We're going to survive. Why, Michael?
He was talking to like 10 people.
Today,
I just imagine everyone's like Morse coding the speech, and they're like, "I guess
today we celebrate Independence Day." And can I tell you one of the worst parts about Independence Day Resurgence?
Yeah,
is that they do two stirring speeches that both suck. They're like, you know, it's like sometimes you see a sequel, and I think we talked about it.
Is Bill Pullman dead?
No, Bill Paxton is dead.
Oh, sure.
That's actually, I don't know what sketch show this was on, but there's a sketch show about a couple who had like they had a safe word, and the safe word was Bill Pullman, but he couldn't remember which so he kept saying Bill Paxton. He's like, no, not that one, not the one who was in Twister, but the one who was in Independence Day, and I think he did some TV movies.
That's a really funny bit. That's a really good see, that's comedy. If that was in this movie, I would like it a lot more.
That is funnier. What I was trying, you've seen sequels where like the people making it totally misunderstand what people liked about the first one. And Independence Day Resurgence is a very good,
even though it is the same people.
Is it?
I thought so.
I mean, Jeff Goldblum and Bill Pullman are the two. Oh, like you mean Roland does it? Or
I'm not speaking with any knowledge here.
Sure. Yeah, maybe. I mean, I believe that a creator of something can also misunderstand what people like about their creation. Don't you think?
Sure.
I mean, George Lucas, you get it.
I think he nailed it.
Perfect.
I think he understood exactly what
he was doing. But like, I just, the speeches are just so bland and dumb, but like the way the music swells, you're like, oh, this is like, remember when they did that?
Here's what an asshole I am. I think I would enjoy that movie more than this movie, but not because it is better, just because that's just what I'm like.
I think you'd be surprised how bad it is.
That's you're selling it. You're selling it to me.
And it doesn't even have the good Hemsworth. It has the loser Hemsworth.
Isn't there like 9 Hemsworths?
I don't know. This is Liam, the one who is married to Miley for a second.
What's the one that's one of them in the Hunger Games? What's the one in the Hunger Games?
I think that's the Liam.
Isn't there another one?
I don't know. Hmm. I think they just do jokes about that.
Luke.
Luke, yeah. Which one? What's he at? What movie is he in?
Let me confirm. It's Luke, but he's in Westworld.
Oh, okay. So that's a guy.
Oh, he's not attractive.
No. Oh, is it? Is it Luke?
Yeah.
Okay.
How is he not hot?
Okay.
I won't lie. There's a joke on The Good Place where they talk about the unattractive Hemsworth brother who's a doctor, and I couldn't remember.
So hot. Yeah, that was very funny.
I was going to say, Luke does listen to the podcast. We should probably keep our criticism.
He should not be such a dick. I think Larry is his name in The Good Place. The fourth Hemsworth brother. Sorry, Mike. You're going to have to do so much editing in this
podcast.
That's
fine. No, I'm not going to do anything. The president gives a stirring speech, and of course, he's a pilot. That's kind of dumb. Like, I know the movie's dumb, but that's kind of dumb. That he's just like, I'll fly too.
I don't think that's that dumb. I think a lot of presidents come from military careers, and it's like he's young and hot. And
I'm not saying the dumb that he was a pilot. That's fine, but that he'd be like, "I'll just give up my command to go."
No, because like they made a whole point that they have so few pilots that they can't get enough people, and it's like, well, I'm one of the few people still alive that can actually fly a fighter jet, so I will do it. But that made sense to me.
Actually,
that tracks.
Hey, you sold it. I believe
you. Thank you. They have fucking Randy Quaid who flies a crop duster and a fighter jet. They can get the president in there.
But I mean, the president has so much to do. You know?
I mean, does he? It seems like he doesn't.
Wasn't the whole cabinet wiped out too?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh, yeah. See, that's the part of the movie that convinced me that I was wrong about my whole, why would they blow up the White House? Because they knew where NORAD was because they had so much knowledge about us.
Hmm.
NORAD is where they have the bunkers. They had all the. Look, John is nodding vigorously because I know these things. They had the vice president and the entire cabinet there. So
I think, I mean, he just nods whenever you talk because he's very supportive.
Yeah, that's a John thing.
Okay, so everything goes pretty well. And Randy Quaid finally dies by flying the spaceship lasers gun thing, which apparently is the only way to kill these things because
right,
he got the missile into the thing.
Yeah, and then they said, we know how to kill these things. Tell everyone else, because there's no way anyone is going to figure it out without America's help.
And, I mean, some of them are probably going to fail.
Apparently not.
Apparently
everyone
not. All right, here we go. We're
our boys, David and Steve, make it back to Earth, look smoking hot, and they're smoking their cigars. Everyone gets a happy ending, except the president whose wife is dead. Yay, the world is saved!
Let's give this podcast happy ending with our next segment, Bro Call. John, are you there?
This is what I get for listening to you guys early. You guys say this deeply hurtful and unsupportive stuff about me.
What did we say?
Frankly, I'm offended.
What did we say?
Yeah, it hurts. And everyone gets a happy ending? Really?
Not the aliens.
And not most of humanity?
Oh, that, yeah.
There's a lot of death. Yeah.
You remember after like the first like scenes of the attack, the general says, we estimate our military is down to 15% after like a few hours of attack.
Yeah, that sucks.
They've destroyed what? 30 of the biggest cities just
like
in the first
everyone
wave?
Everyone of the main cast, obviously.
The vibe
John.
Is happy.
You know, frankly, I think you guys just aren't thinking about this at a macro enough sense,
please,
Mickey.
Please explain it more.
Well, I mean, so that is the thing I love most about Independence Day. I am a it's well known at this point on this podcast that I am a fan of world building.
To establish this review, you are a big fan of this movie also.
I am a big fan of this movie. It did come out when I was like 12, so huge, huge fan. I put it on the list, I'm pretty sure. And Sam probably talked about this, but like this is like the original summer blockbuster.
It's as we know it, like Jaws, yeah, is the original summer blockbuster. But
like I think it's famous particularly because of its marketing. I think it had like the first.
Yeah, Sam talked all about that.
The Super Bowl ad.
Yes, she did. I was actually the one who talked about watching it for the first time in the 90s. How it's like, Jesus fuck, you've never seen anything like this.
Oh yeah, yeah. And so naturally, as a young impressionable kid, and even today, I appreciate that the movie approaches this admittedly cheesy and over the top concept with logic. And yes, I'm sure someone like my brother is going to yell at me, but the aliens have a very good attack plan. They have a logical reason for what they're doing. Even we're able to weave in stuff like alien landings in Area 51 directly into this plot in a logical way. Yes, we can say like, but that doesn't make any sense. But I mean, really, you can, using the aliens attack plan, it does make sense, and I appreciate it.
I don't
go ahead. You're giving me this face.
No, I don't know. I don't disagree with any of that.
I think I disagree because I love how great this movie is because it just so simply does what it wants to do. But you do need to not think about some plot elements too hard, right?
Hit me. Tell me what is super illogical about it.
You're the one who said it was crazy that they would talk to each other with their own satellites and have a countdown clock.
No, that was David, and I was just backing him up. That was a little bit weird. Why wouldn't you bring your own satellites? But at the same token, I appreciated it.
I don't. It's not a criticism for me, but of course you can pick this movie apart logically. But who cares?
Let me rephrase then. Let me do it this another way. A lot of movies, like these big bad movies, you'll have this big a Bond movie, for example. The bad guys in Bond movies always have an overarching plan, but it doesn't really make sense. It's easy to pull apart. Why are they doing it, really? Couldn't there be like an easier way to get $1 billion?
Oh, sure.
But these aliens have a very obvious, clear, understandable goal and a really decent attack plan. I mean, the idea of hitting all of our major cities and then our military in two subsequent shock and awe hits and then invading the world, that makes a good deal of sense if you were going to wipe out humanity and take all of our natural resources.
I feel like
deeply appreciate that. What?
The hero's plan is a little dumb, though.
The hero's plan is dumb, yeah. It does make a degree of logical sense, but I mean, what are you going to do? You have to do something to get around this awesome technology, both as a filmmaker and the heroes.
I'm not saying the film should have spent an extra hour devising a good one.
Yeah, and I'm okay with it. I think the thing that really sells this sort of logical and grounding approach in a movie, again, this over the top, is all the background elements that the movie gives us. Specifically, the newscasters and all the news elements, and like when you're in like the Situation Room screens behind them with like where the spaceships are and where the attacks are going on, all this context that the movie gives us without like forcing it down our throats, to me, I deeply appreciate that on a world building level.
You know what we haven't talked about now that you bring that up is we haven't talked about 9/11, which I know you're all like, well, really? No. Okay. So a lot of people say that you couldn't have made this movie like 10 years after 9/11 because it was like, because of the visual effects of blowing up buildings, very similar to a thing that nobody had experienced before, you know? So I think what's really interesting watching it now is what you're talking about, John. Like the way the filmmaker talked about, showed experiencing it is how most people would, you know, mm-hmm. watching grainy news footage. And that's how we all experienced 9/11, of a very muted version of what this movie is trying to do. And that's, I mean, the movie didn't try to do that.
I feel like you guys are taking this movie way too seriously. It's a campy film.
It is a campy film, but I think that's one of this movie's greatest strengths is you can approach this movie from many different angles. You can approach this looking for a cheesy, campy movie. You can approach it from a John Flaherty standpoint of thinking about it like logically, like how would this attack work? And watching the elements. You can even approach this movie from a character-driven standpoint, like because the characters are actually genuinely interesting and they have good relationships.
I don't know if they're interesting.
Okay, well, I find them I'm like into the characters. I like the characters. Let's go with that. But you can approach this movie and put it in your mind in many different ways.
I just think this movie has aged surprisingly well and really did a lot for me watching it today.
Yeah, I agree. I actually do think it aged really well. One scene that really hammers home for me the world building part, and I know it's just a John Flaherty scene in totality, but right after they're doing the Morse code and they go to the two British actors in the pilots in the desert. Yeah, I know you probably made fun of it earlier, but the fact that it's the two Brits, but then there are French planes behind them, and then there's Israeli and Iraqi guys like right there, and I'm like, just it's such a short scene, but it lets you give this global context and like what's going on in the world just real fast, and lets my imagination run with the world building, and I love that. I love it not being shoved down my throat too.
I didn't even think of that. That is interesting, John. What grade do you give this film?
Okay. So you want me to cut my last points here real quick?
Oh no. Oh, go.
Okay. I can be quick here. I never somehow noticed that Data is in this movie, even though he has a prominent role, and now I can never unsee it, and I'm just so happy he's here. Amazing.
We all are.
You guys talked about the speech, right? Because
yeah. No,
despite what Jimmy Flaherty says, that speech is the best speech that's ever been in a movie ever, and yes, amazing. Negative points. The Los Angeles crew, the Randy Quaid team, they suck. I hate every part with them in it. Right. They're terrible.
I thought that was kind of a crowd favorite. I thought people like this movie generally like Randy Quaid's story.
Really?
That's what I
Is
heard.
That a thing?
I thought so.
Having watched this movie in the tent with you, I think you came at this movie from a really weird place, Mickey.
I'm not coming in with my own expectations. The movie just doesn't give me anything.
Yeah, we're just not even on remotely in the same plane because Randy Quaid's part sucks so hard. And never, ever, ever watch the extended cut of this movie because apparently the director agreed with me and cut most of their parts.
Or the editor.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, dang it. Also never watch the sequel.
I've already seen it twice.
The first half, I actually gave me some hope, and then the second half is one of the worst second halves of a movie that has ever been shot and produced and released ever in the history of film.
They had to do so little, and they tried so hard at the worst things.
They actively tried to make it suck, I think. Like, anyway. Let's just troll our audiences. So I'm going to give it an A minus. No, an A. I'm going to give it an A. And I'm only docking it for Randy Quaid.
All right, John, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I love this movie. It's great.
Michael, what grade do you give the film?
Well, I don't like the film, but I do have to give it a lot of credit because I think the spectacle and the visuals are very good. I do think the characters have a lot of charm. And even though it is long, there's not like a lot of parts where I think, oh, this is obvious filler. Besides, I agree the Randy Quaid stuff is the worst part. But it's just my personal viewing experience that I just don't get a lot out of it. There's not a lot in the movie for me that really pulls me in and makes me super invested. And
that's so fair.
And that could be the simplicity of the characters, maybe. Even though I do find them charming, I do like the actors a lot. So I got to be harsh because it's just... I don't ever want to see it again. I got to give it like a C, I think. Even though I still kind of see why you guys would like it. It's just not a me movie.
That's fair. I think I'm going to give it an A minus, but I even think that's a little harsh because I think it just so perfectly executes what it wants to do. I think the practical effects are so good and I wish people would just do that again.
We're never going back.
I know.
What, are you going to spend money? No way.
I know. I just...
They don't even pay the people who do the computers decently.
Are you people who do the computers?
I know. We're not getting paid. No, I'm talking about artists. I'm not an artist.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, no, I also think this movie, even though it's a silly, big blockbuster movie that's kind of dumb, it did kind of seriously influence movies that we see now. And that's really something. And I think it ages well. So I like it a lot. And A minus.
Cool.
I feel really good about that grade. Michael, who are we sponsored by this week?
Sponsored by, let me think here. We've already been sponsored by Apple, so they're not going to double dip.
They wouldn't do that.
They would never do that. Steve is not going to double dip from the grave.
Yeah, no podcast ever uses the same sponsor twice.
Everyone knows that about this week. What company makes Dr. Pepper?
That's a good question. Let's look at our copy here.
Like Nestle?
We mentioned Dr. Pepper, but let's be clear.
Nestle, maybe?
No, it's made by Dr. Pepper, guys.
It's just the Dr. Pepper company?
Yeah, Dr. Pepper is the overarching company that makes a lot of drinks.
All right. Well, I'm glad we know that because they definitely gave us money for this copy.
It is Dr. Pepper.
Yeah, and they make 7-Up and others. Maybe Fanta, I think.
Do you want a Fanta? Fanta? That's a thing. Anyway, Dr. Pepper, when you're like, I want to be assaulted in the face with flavor when I drink my soda. Who's Dr. Pepper, my friend.
Who's the comedian who's like, it tastes like a sexy battery? I think he has another bit is like, every time a chef gives me a meal, it's like, take it back. It tastes too Dr. Peppery. And I like to see what he changes.
James Acaster.
That's right.
That is a comedian I highly recommend everybody.
That's right. I just saw a little bit of his on Netflix. It's like, my favorite number? Teen? Sounds high, but it's in the teens. Great comedian.
I just saw his bit where he talks about the British Museum, and he's like, so some countries, they come back to the British Museum, and they're like, oh yeah, we just want our stuff back. I mean, it says it's our stuff. It's right there on the plaque. This will take 1 minute. And then the Brits say, no, finders keepers. Fuck you. People want to see this still.
Got a pencil from the gift shop? No eraser? And they go, sorry, sir, we don't believe in erasing mistakes from the past. Anyway, so check him out. He's our real sponsor. Great comedian.
Yeah. Are we just going to do his bits?
Let's just do the whole bit. It's on Netflix, but we'll just listen to us.
Just listen to us do it slightly worse than he does.
I feel like we did it great. Clint, what's our next movie? Let's spin the wheel.
Oh, let me do the little, what's it? Ba-doop, ba-doop. And the next film is Parasite.
Wow.
An Oscar favorite from last year. So that'll be fun.
It was the winner for Best Picture. So everyone likes it. And, stay tuned for that trailer, which is in Korean. And cut.
Oh,
Full-time으로 수업 어떻게 하시는지. Is it okay with you? 우리 다송이는 완전 예술가 체질인데.
침팬지를 그린 거죠?
자화상이에요.
역시.
그동안 미술쌤도 여러 명 바꿔가면서 해봤는데요.
제가 사람 하나 하고 떠올랐는데.
아, 잠깐. 제시카, 외동딸, 일리노이, 시카고. 과 선배는 김진모, 그는 이사촌.
부자인데 착하다니까.
진짜 니가 착한 거지.
I'm deadly serious.
I'm 진짜로 이상한 게 뭔 것 같아.